pre-recorded, completely unscripted, and about as organised as the thought processes of some members of the Australian Senate. You're listening to news, views and opinions on events from here at home and around the globe on politics, business and society in general. This is the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Yes, welcome back, listeners, to the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove. And it's an interesting episode, this one. There's a little bit of tension here at Iron Fist Velvet Glove headquarters.
You're not still going on that about that, are you?
Well, listeners, as you could tell, I've got an allegation here, a misuse of the podcast helicopter by the Velvet Glove. You know, went to a secular party meeting, said he was there on podcast business, and, you know, it's a misuse. I mean, when we bought that helicopter, Velvet Glove, it was strictly for podcast business.
Look, I mentioned the podcast on at least two occasions at that meeting. I therefore think it definitely falls within the guidelines of the use. And besides, as part of the contracts that you and I both signed, I had a wider expense policy than someone like yourself did.
Oh, really?
Yes, absolutely. You know, I mean, that was part of the deal when I became the Velvet Glove. You know, it could have been the Velvet Glove and the Iron Fist, but no, we went to the Iron Fist and the Velvet Glove.
Three years
of the chopper.
What I'll do, Scott, is I'll just put you on probation. How's that for a while? And if you behave yourself.
Precisely what does probation mean? I wasn't aware that the use of the helicopter for attending a secular party meeting was outside of the remit. So I just don't see how I could possibly be in any sort of trouble over that.
Look, I'd let you get away with it, but then that would just make me too close to Tony Abbott. So, you know, can we just stop now and we'll refer to the real situation? Because if I let you go, I'll just be doing a Tony Abbott.
Well, that's a good point. You can't do that.
So anyway, Scott, let's talk about Bronwyn Bishop and the helicopter.
Speaker of the House, yes. Had some numbers quoted to me on the weekend. 407 members have been ejected from the House on her watch. 7 from the Coalition, 400 from the ALP. Mm. Bias much? Just a question?
Yes.
Just a question? Yeah. The whole thing blew up when it turned out that Mrs. Bishop had chartered a helicopter to go the enormous distance from Melbourne to Geelong. And she initially charged the $5,227 to the taxpayer.
Yep.
I'm not sure exactly what the sequence of events was, how it became public. I believe they have to put them on a website, and presumably a journo somewhere found it and then tried to find out, well, why would you spend $5,000 on a flight from Melbourne to Geelong when the rest of us drive? And got down to finding out that she had actually attended a Liberal Party fundraiser, because one of the Liberal minions who was in there had tweeted a photograph of the chopper pulling up and her getting into a golf cart to go back to the golf club.
Yeah.
So that's where it's all come from, that's been become public. What stuck in my throat was how she just said, I don't think I need to apologise, I've already paid the money back. And that what the other thing about Mrs. Bishop too is, and let's face it, she's not an idiot. Mm. She is an intelligent individual, but she wants us to believe she's an idiot. She wants us to accept her explanation that she honestly thought that attending a Liberal Party fundraiser was valid business for the Speaker, and therefore she could use her more generous travel allowances than other members of Parliament get, and sting you, me, and the loyal listeners out there for $5,000 to travel, what is it, 80 clicks, I think it is the exact distance. Mm. And then to make matters worse, you know, Mr. Abbott's got a, you know, he must have been one of those really unpopular people all through his life, I think, because he just doesn't get it. You know, surely he can see that the public are really angry about this. They are, you know, they are livid. And you hear people making comments about it just in the shops, for heaven's sake. You know, where I was, yeah. You know, it was today, you heard people talking about it. They're angry.
Yep.
And then this is his response. It, and this is when you said that you're going to put me on probation. I believe that must be a reference to this report that Mr. Abbott has put Mrs. Bishop on probation. And this is his quote. It's a serious error of judgment, and understandably the Australian people are unhappy that a senior representative of the parliament should think that it was all right to use a helicopter to get around when a Commonwealth car would have been available at the fraction of the price. Do you think?
Yeah.
I mean, are we, you know, am I missing something? Is Mrs. Bishop, was that chopper a heaven-sent cloud upon which she descended from heaven to be amongst us mere mortals for this time? Or I just, it's reprehensible behaviour that's not the behaviour of a Democrat, it's the behaviour of an aristocrat who doesn't seem to think that her tenure in Parliament is on the at the will of the people, but by the will of God or something.
Yes.
So, you could speak on it for volumes, and I do promise, dear listener, I will keep it quiet. I will keep it short. But I was at Woolies today getting a couple of things. Mm-hmm. And here's what you can get for $5,227. Oh. 1,802 loaves of bread. 653 kilograms of butter, 2,272 litres of milk, and not just any old milk, this is the organic milk. Incidentally, also, at the risk of upsetting you, $5,227 also buys 9 minutes and 38 seconds of the National School Chaplaincy Program.
Oh, not that again. Scott, I'm going to stop you there. I think I've got two things on the topic of this before
is that
we
right?
move on. Yes, two things. One was, I read an article in New Matilda where yes. the...
It's a little left-leaning, but it is very good. It is very good work, but it is left-leaning, yeah.
Anyway, what somebody discovered was that the Liberal Party website used to have a transcript of what Tony Abbott said about the speaker who got booted out, Peter Slipper. And, of course, he makes all these statements about, you know, upholding the integrity of the position in Parliament, et cetera, et cetera. Mm. And the transcript suddenly disappeared from the Liberal Party website sometime between now and the 25th of May. But, of course, all these things on the internet, they never completely are erased and it was able to be recovered by other people. So... just interesting.
Once it's there, you can't get rid of it.
Yeah. So it looks like somebody in the Liberal Party has tried to remove that transcript from the Liberal Party website because it would be quite inconvenient to have it there. And that's been picked up. But we always like to give our listeners, Scott, an interesting sort of take on things. And here's my interesting take on Bronwyn Bishop. And It's this whole idea of losing touch with reality. I mean, in Canberra, you're in a bubble and
yes.
you've got a lot of yes people surrounding you and you're treated with deference. And I'm just not sure how many of our listeners, or even you, Scott, for that matter, are you aware of the Roman triumph and memento homo?
I have heard Roman triumph, and mm-hmm. please don't ask me to explain it. I remember the term, but couldn't tell you exactly what it means.
I'll give you a bit of an explanation, but basically, if a Roman general had a really massive victory, like a big, big victory, won a lot of territory, defeated an army, you know, extremely well, then he might be awarded what was called a Roman triumph, where he could parade into Rome with his soldiers and all sorts of lavish accolades would be placed on him as he rode through the streets of Rome. But a really interesting part of the ceremony is that a slave would walk behind, or actually in a chariot, I think, holding a laurel wreath above the general's head, but repeatedly whispering in the ear of the general, memento homo, which means, remember, you are a man. And in the context means, remember, you are only a man, so that the general would not mistake the state's honour for his own, which I think is fantastic, that in those days they could say, you know, we're worried these people are going to have a big head, and let's put someone behind whispering in his ear to say, memento homo, you are just a man. I'm proposing that perhaps during her probation period, somebody needs to follow Bronwyn around, whispering in her ear, something along the lines on, you are, remember, you're just a mortal person. And I think she needs that. So there's something Romans could teach us.
I think the power's gone to her head.
Mm, so
I mean, like, she was never what I would describe as a down-to-earth individual, even in the old days of opposition when she, one of her favourite lines was, don't you know who I am?
Mm.
And now that she's got this official position, it's just got out of control.
Yeah, so, actually, Scott, a little bit of late-breaking news. I've just heard this on the news. I'll just play it for you. Just
exclusive, is it?
Tony Abbott apparently has made a decision in relation to Bronwyn Bishop, and here it is. I'll just manage to play it. So
in order to maintain the respect and the reputation of the Parliament, in order to preserve the integrity of the government and our institutions, it is very important that the Prime Minister act swiftly to require the Speaker to step aside, and it's very important that the Australian Federal Police quickly investigate these matters so that they can be resolved as soon as is humanly possible.
My mistake. Sorry, that was when he was in opposition. So, right, sorry, that was opposition and referring to Peter Slipper.
So he said then what he should be saying now, is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. So, anyway, that's enough of Helicopter Gate. I reckon we've covered that one, and we'll see what happens.
It has been done to death in the media, and it's been thumped on Facebook, that's for sure.
Mm. So you want to talk, Scott, next topic?
Look, Mike Baird stuck his head above the parapet and or drunk from the poison chalice, whatever way you want to put it. He's called for an increase in the goods and services tax.
Mm.
Now, frankly, you know, it's one of the things that I thought was most disappointing. Well, among the many things that were very disappointing about the previous government was when they had their, this is Rudd's words, root and branch investigation into the tax system, you can look at every single tax except the goods and services tax. It was sort of like sitting in a room with an elephant there and saying nothing about it. So, you know, it always offends me when you have any side of politics saying we're going to look at everything except so-and-so.
Yep.
Well, this time someone's actually said we've got to talk about so-and-so. We've got to talk about the GST. Now, I've also heard opponents who are opposed to increasing the GST, and he think it was the Victorian Premier, Andrews is his surname, can't think what his given name is, but he's made the point, he said the GST is a brutally efficient tax and therefore shouldn't be looked at, therefore you can't do it because it's just so good, it just raises all this revenue and so on and so forth.
Right.
The implication being that the poor are going to be hit the hardest by it, and yes, okay, it is demonstrably a regressive tax. You can look at it and say it does hit lower income earners harder, despite the fact that a higher income earner is going to be paying a larger amount of GST. Their disposable incomes are going to be different. You know, someone on a higher income is going to be saving more money as opposed, but, you know, let's face it, you about eat the same as what everyone else does. So,
I like the way that, you know, if you want to buy a boat or a big toy or stuff,
absolutely,
you know,
and I agree with you. I mean, I think it should be looked at, and I think we should look at it. We should look at broadening the base, increasing the rate, all that sort of stuff. And all we've got to do is we've then got to tweak the mechanisms that pay that back to those who can least afford it.
Mm.
Fun fact, I was a fightback boy in 1993, which is a long time ago, listeners. I'm hoping that most of you that are listening to this podcast don't remember that. But in that package, you know, it was derided by the ALP and the ACTU as being horrible. It was going to destroy the create an underclass of poor and all the rest of it, and that the pensioners wouldn't be able to afford to eat and so on and so forth. Yeah, the pension was going to be doubled.
Right.
It wasn't just going to be increased by 20% or 25% or anything like that. It was an outright doubling of it, because the 15% broad-based consumption tax was going to bring in genuinely rivers of gold. The 10% Democrats manipulated GST that we have now that doesn't take into account fresh food and other services that were deemed politically unpopular to tax.
Yep.
The CPI on those products have been moving along, but the CPI on electronics and all the rest of it that are taxed has actually been significantly lower than the average CPI.
Yep.
Therefore, the tax has not grown the way you would expect it to.
Mm.
Now, when you get someone saying it's a horrible tax because it's brutally efficient, that's one of the reasons you should look at it, because it is brutally efficient and it then gives you enough revenue to actually do something about the regressive nature of the tax. You could skew income tax cuts to the lower end. You could you could spend a significant amount of money on increasing the tax-free threshold for low-income earners and also pay higher amounts of welfare. I think it should be looked at.
That's a bit different to what Nick Reiner was suggesting last night on Late Line.
I missed Griner's interview. What did he have to say?
He was suggesting that the GST be increased to at least 15%. And he said, you know, we've got comparatively high corporate tax rates, and he thought that it should then be used towards lowering corporate tax rates and, I think, high income tax rates.
The thing that's been lost on a lot of people from the right is that, for an economy to function, you need to have consumers, and for consumers to consume, they need to have a reasonable amount of income, which means they need to have a measurable disposable income too.
Yep.
So you have to target your tax cuts so that your majority of people can still go out and afford to buy frivolous things like food, for example.
Yes.
I think that the whole world has started to look at that. You can see there's arguments in the US, which has a comparatively high company tax rate, by the way. It's I believe its company tax rate is 36 cents in the dollar.
Right. Yep.
So if the grandfather of capitalism thinks that a corporate tax rate of 36 cents in the dollar isn't too bad, I don't know why Nick Griner's got his knickers in a twist about 30.
Yeah, what they were saying was the OECD average for a GST type of tax was actually 19%. So
that Australia's... That doesn't surprise
me.
Yeah. Ours is quite low.
Mm. So anyway, the hard part, I guess, is it requires all of the states to agree to a change.
It depends. If you, there is a mechanism that was put in there back in 2000 or 2001 when the legislation was introduced that said you've got to have the unanimous backing of the state premiers. Now, Hockey has said he won't move on the rate of the GST or the base of the GST unless he gets the unanimous backing of the state premiers. Andrews in Victoria has already said no. There are others who are talking about, we understand what Baird is saying, but we should attack that by increasing the Medicare levy. If you had control of both houses of parliament, it'd be possible to repeal that part of the legislation and then just put it through.
Right.
So
I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, like, you've already had a number of them come out and say no, and even the Tasmanian treasurer and the Liberals are in charge down in Tasmania these days. He said that he was open to a discussion on it, but he didn't think it needed to move. Funnily enough, Mike Baird's had some support from Jay Weatherill South Australia.
Right.
Jay Weatherill is the South Australian Premier.
Right.
And he said that, quote, There would have to be a significant change to the GST. A significant change to the GST would be needed before he would contemplate supporting an increase. I don't know what he wants.
Probably in the formula, because that was
for the carve up. Yeah, yes. But South Australia's been a beneficiary. They have always received more than what they've raised.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't stop him wanting more still.
Yeah, I suppose so. It's the only thing that every premier agrees on is we didn't get enough.
Just because you got a great deal doesn't mean you wouldn't want a better one. So
I'm pleased someone's actually brought it up. I know the accusation, and it's probably a reasonable accusation from the opposition, was that the government is deliberately starving the states, so they're going to be forced to act on the GST. It's probably a reasonable accusation. It looks fairly accurate, but it, like I said, it is the elephant in the room. And I wish I could remember who it was. I think it was Andrews, but I can't put my hand on my heart and say it was definitely him. But whoever it was said it's a brutally efficient tax. Well, demonstrably, you've got a revenue problem.
Yep.
Therefore, you need brutally efficient taxes.
Well,
so I think it should be looked at very seriously.
Do we have a revenue problem? I mean, Joe Hockey told us.
Oh,
that
Joe
we're
Hockey
in,
claims
in,
it's it.
In dire straits, and a budget emergency. But he's changed his tune.
Well, he's changed his tune. I mean, this weekend he appears to have had a thought bubble that people have taken seriously. Sunday, he said, I would like to be in a position to promise more tax cuts at the next election. Which, yep. You know, I mean, it wasn't all that long ago that we were talking about fiscal Armageddon, you know. Look, I mean, you know, $41 billion is what we're putting on the national credit card each year. Clearly that's not sustainable. At some point you're going to have to do something about it.
Right.
But grants to the states came in at $41.3 billion. So if Hockey thinks he can afford an income tax cut to buy himself another 3 years, you'd have to say to the states, well, we're not giving you any more grants. You've got to sort this out yourselves. And, of course, then bang goes your hospital system and your education system. So, you know, they're going to have to, well, whoever wins the next federal election, be it Labor or Liberal, they are going to have to look at both revenue measures and expenditure cuts. So they're going to have to be, but the expenditure cuts do need to be more targeted, and you can't just kick the living daylights out of welfare recipients, and at the same time you can't just, you know, live in some sort of fantasy land that says that if you do what the Greens say, the multinationals will fund everything. You know, it's going to have to be a bit, the pain's going to have to be spread wide so that it gets fixed up.
I think it just shows he doesn't have a plan when he can, say we've got a budget crisis, and then shortly afterwards, in the lead up to an election, start suggesting he's suddenly got room for... It's just an example of the fact that he doesn't have a plan.
It's been talked about before by people such as Michelle Grattan, you know, people that have been watching governments for a long time, where she said there is no overreaching narrative for this government.
Mm. Yep.
Now, if there was a budget emergency, you'd be still talking about a budget emergency, but they were deliberately loosening the purse strings in the last budget for the simple reason that it's Keynesian economics. When the private sector ain't doing so well, the government has to stump up some cash to try and get things moving again, mm-hmm. which is precisely... The ALP did it. You know, remember when we talked about when we were told that this was prolific at expenditure, that there's a cash splash, blah, 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 blah. It's exactly that. Governments loosen their purse strings when the private sector isn't doing so well to keep things moving. I mean, and the commentator at the time, I think it was from the Nine Network anyway, I remember at the time he said, you know, because someone asked him about the rapidly evaporating surplus, and he says, no, he says, a surplus is a fair-weathered friend. When you've got full employment, people worry about the government books. When someone's unemployed, they worry about how much government programs are going to be out there to find new work.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a shock absorber. In tough times,
Absolutely.
Run a deficit, and in good times, you can run a surplus.
Run a surplus, precisely.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, to me, it just looks exactly like Michelle Grattan said. This is just more evidence that they don't really have an overarching narrative.
Mm.
And, you know, then you, it's not just me saying that. There's people that really do know what they're talking about. For example, former Reserve Bank board member Warwick McGibbon. McGibbon said recent policy proposals from the Grattan Institute, such as cutting superannuation tax concessions, are pretty good ideas, but it would be far better for a broader assessment of the tax system as a whole to improve the integrity of the system and fix the Commonwealth budget. Mm. So, you know, it's that what Kevin Rudd told us we were going to get, which was a root and branch review of the tax system, is long overdue, and it's got to be a proper one, not just at the end of it all we're going to increase the tax on the miners.
It won't happen with this crowd, and it won't happen with the next crowd. It's going to need somebody to come along, a Paul Keating type of character with charisma to sell it, because the current choices aren't up to selling something like that.
They aren't. They seriously aren't. And, you know, what Keating, Hawke, Howard and Peacock, those four of them are responsible for the great reform era of the 1980s.
Peacock? Because,
yeah, Peacock and Howard, neither of them objected to the main thrust of it.
Right.
A lot of the reform measures went through the Senate without National Party support, but they went through with Liberal Party support because they knew it was the right thing to do.
Yep.
Now, they were able to do that because Hawke and Keating reached across the aisle to them.
Mm.
So, you know, Peacock, yes, he never was Prime Minister, but he was a very good opposition leader.
Okay.
And let's face it, at the end of the day, the ALP were implementing Liberal Party policy.
Yeah. Yep. All right.
It was once said of Paul Keating that he was the best Liberal Party treasurer the country's ever had.
Don't know about that. That's a topic for another day. But now, we were remiss last week, Scott. Because,
what did we miss?
Well, there wasn't much in secular type issues. And what I had overlooked was the episode of Q&A that I'd actually watched.
Stackhouse, the Canadian, isn't it?
Yes. Stackhouse came out and said some stuff on Q&A, which just has me incensed. So, Scott, what I'm going to do is play a little bit of that for you as well. And
Should I get a whiskey while I'm listening to this?
You're going to need one. It was actually a great question from an audience member who said, my question is for John Stackhouse. I'm not a Christian, but I was just wondering how you decide which aspects of the Bible to follow and which to ignore. For example, the Bible encourages slavery in the New Testament and the Old Testament, and even go so far as to name shaving one's head to be sinful. Do you think it's inevitable that Christians will eventually ignore all teachings of the Bible as society's values and attitudes progress? Now, this was his response, which I'll play a bit of that, and we'll talk about that afterwards. So here it is.
Folks will say things like, well, parts of the Bible seem absurd to me, so therefore I'll dismiss the Bible. Well, parts of any complex document can seem absurd if you don't know how to interpret. Parts of the criminal code can seem absurd if you don't understand the context. Parts of any complex legislation can seem absurd, and so people can pick and choose phrases out of their context to make them sound absurd. But the Bible is not a book for kids. The Bible is a grown-up book. It's meant to do grown-up things, like form people into whole spiritual human beings and form communities of love across cultural lines over the centuries. So we shouldn't be surprised that one can pick and choose at apparently odd things. That's why people actually go to school to learn how to read the Bible carefully, the way they go to school to read law carefully, or they go to school to read the physical world carefully. So my sense often is a little impatience that folks who would never think that they would contradict an astrophysicist, they never think that they would contradict an airline pilot, feel quite free to say silly things about religion without actually taking the time to study why this book would say what it does.
Well, I have to congratulate John Stackhouse, because I would have thought in 1 minute and 9 seconds, it was pretty hard to say more things that I disagree with in such a short amount of time. I hardly a sentence in there that I can accept. And it just, well, it at some stage, when I've got a spare 3 days, I'm going to go through the list of panelists on Q&A. There's a Wikipedia site that will list them, and tally up the number of priests and clergy and imam and religious apologists that they have on that show versus the number of atheists slash secularists that they have. Like, they trot out priests and guys like this all the time. Even next week, like, next week is another Catholic archbishop is on the panel in Brisbane. Like, God, they get a good run, the religious groups. That's, you know, part A of my diatribe against this whole thing. But then B is, this guy, he's saying that, you know, parts of the criminal code can seem absurd if you don't understand the context. Well, that's not true. Like, there's nothing in the criminal code that's absurd. If you might read it as a layman and go, well, I don't understand that, but it won't actually look to you to be absurd.
There's not an awful lot in the criminal code that you sort of look at and you think, well, you know, it's, that shouldn't be illegal.
It simply lists elements of an offence. If you do A, B, and C, then you're guilty of X. And if you do A, B, C with an aggravation of D, then you'll be guilty of this. And this, you know, it might take a few readings to actually get the full gist of it. But any layman I could explain the criminal code to. And at no point are we going to go, well, there's an obvious contradiction there. There's an obvious absurdity. It's just going to be, well, this connects to this concept and this connects to this concept. And people will go, oh, aha, well, that all makes sense. But you can't say that about the Bible. So this notion that, you know, we hear it all the time. Like we mentioned before last week about a religious podcast, you know, the Religion and Ethics Report. And there's all sorts of programs on ABC Radio National to do with religion, and this whole concept of theologians, you know, somebody will be described as a theologian who will come out and give his or her theology lesson on the Bible, and it dresses the Bible up to be a serious document when it's a bunch of nonsense. So I put something on the Facebook page of the Secular Party about this, inviting people to say how they would have responded to John Stackhouse if they were the next member of the panel and able to speak.
Yeah, I've been looking in on that every couple of days.
Yeah, and my response to him would have been something along the lines of, you know, I could read the Grimm fairy tales in their original German, and I could look at the characters and make analogies to modern day, and, you know, maybe this character was really a feminist or not a feminist or blah, blah, blah. And you could have all sorts of interesting discussions about it. But at the end of the day, it's just a fairy tale. And that's that's what, you know, you can talk about the letters that St. Paul wrote. And, oh, well, this first batch seemed to be written by one person, this other batch seemed to be written by another person, and, you know, perhaps that was written by these people, and, like, all very interesting. But at some point, you just have to stand back and say, these are just fairy tales. You are not a theologian. You are a fairyologist.
Hmm. And look, it's how they've made it, I don't know why it's. It's one of those sort of things that our humanity hasn't discarded yet. And they're sort of, they hang on still as the expert that you roll out when you don't have an expert that can give you an answer. So you just grab someone that'll philosophize about an answer.
Yep.
And but the thing that I found incredible about, you know, just from that pack you played us where he says a community of love, you know, stoning people to death.
Yep. It's meant to do grown-up things, like form people into whole spiritual human beings and form communities of love across cultural lines over the centuries.
Mm. Mm. Yeah, he really should read about the Jesus Wars, you know, in the first or second century of the Common Era. Yeah, when they went and bludgeoned each other to death over their interpretations of it.
You know, you should just pick up a newspaper, don't you? Do it the easy way.
You love, you know, it.
And the other panelists, of course, they're all polite, and some of them gave a bit of a response about, you know, oh, it's not a very flexible document, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, it really needs somebody there to say, what a load of rubbish.
And not only that, I mean, even if you just look at the sort of the power, you know, what he's sort of talking about, that gives you an interesting power dynamic in that, you know, you couldn't possibly understand this unless you're from, you've got a theological background, which means you must be from the clergy.
Exactly.
You as a mere mortal can't understand what God's actually wanting you to do. So you've got to talk to me about it. And by the way, I need 10% of your income to go further.
That's right. It's, you know, you trust the astrophysicist on his matters. You trust the pilot on his matters. If you don't have the time to read it, then you're going to have to trust me about the Bible. Like, that's the argument that he's running. And it's dangerous. It's,
and we've all heard Fred Nile before.
Yeah. It's just dangerous. So it just grinds my gears that they get such a great run in the media, and you know, full marks to the religious groups. They will trot up spokespeople and they'll get on these things, and you know, they can say what they like. Like, this is, you know, it's risk free. Like, you know, if a politician gets on that program, for example, well, you know, they could stuff up somewhere along the way and make an error, or, you know, look bad. Like, it's a bit of a risk. But a theologian can get up there and make the sort of nonsensical comment that this John Stackhouse just did and gets completely away with it. So it's risk-free. You may as well, as a religious apologist, you know, get your voice out there and say whatever you like, whenever you like, because until you say something truly outrageous about not wanting gay people in your church or something like that, then you'll get away with murder.
Well, you know, in the home of the free, where they have exemptions for religions all over the place, right? Now, they've got I forget which state it is, has a law that's just been brought in to say that, well, within the last 6 months, it's been brought in to say that a woman seeking a termination of her pregnancy has to wait a statutory, I don't know, 21 days or something or other before, you know, just to make sure she's been through all the options and that sort of stuff.
Yes.
So she can't just discover she's pregnant in the morning, go and get RU486 that afternoon and be done with it.
She could get a gun, probably, in that time.
Yeah, and shoot someone, exactly.
Get a gun.
Yeah. So because they've got all sorts of laws around making sure that their governments don't tamper with people's religious freedoms, the Church of Satan has objected, because they are saying that terminations should be freely available to their members because Satanists have no objection to terminations at all.
Right. Yes. Yes.
So, you know, that's what I call biting at you've been bitten in your bum because of yourself. Yeah. You know, it's just a dumb thing to do.
Yeah. Well, you know, we could spend hours on crazy American evangelists, and so I try to stay away from
one. Day we should just do a podcast. You know, it'll be a comedy fest, but we should talk about crazy evangelists.
Well,
just for the hour. Yeah,
there's no shortage of them. So
no, it's easy material to get together.
Yeah. So that's my little rant about Q&A. If we ever release episode one, Scott, I remind you that I did have another rant about Q&A there and the nature of the program. And at some stage down the track, we'll release that as a collector's edition. And
collector's edition, yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, when we had all sorts of echoey voices and all the rest of it.
Yeah. So I didn't tell you about this, but I did briefly want to mention, because we do have a bit of time, is the Iran nuclear deal. So essentially,
yeah, that was interesting talking on the weekend to an Iranian lady. Yeah.
Yeah. So basically, you've got a situation where Iran has been under very intense trade sanctions. So they've been unable to get stuff in and out of the country and run an economy for fear of them getting in stuff which will help them move along in terms of producing nuclear weapons. So they have reached an agreement with a bunch of powers such as the US, Britain, France, Germany, China and Russia that they will allow a very intensive inspection program of their facilities, and in return their economy is opened up to the world again and they can actually participate. And to me, it sounds like a really good arrangement. So in this day and age where we've got failed states in the Middle East, and that's where Iran was heading because of the difficulties of an economy that can't import and export. They were looking at a situation of complete collapse, and we all know what happens in the Middle East when you have
when there's complete collapse, and then the only one that's left is the Iranian religious police.
Yes, it's just nutters get in charge, and then you've got another disaster. So, so to me, it sounds like a great arrangement, and I think at a later stage, Scott, we're going to do a sort of a Middle East podcast where we go through the bit of the history and the nuts and bolts and how do we end up where we've ended up today. And
from Morocco on one side right through to Pakistan on the other.
Yeah, and we're going to wrap it all up in 60 minutes. There's a challenge.
We'll solve the problems of the world, of the Middle East in 60 minutes. Fantastic.
Yeah, we'll provide a solution. Nobody will like it because guess what, everybody? It involves, you know, giving religion up. But that, you know, that is the solution. But anyway, we will do that 1 week, and that'll be worth doing. But I thought I'd mention that Iran nuclear one just because it was in the headlines at the moment.
Yeah, it's it seems to me the only real objection. I mean, look, the Republicans in America are complaining, but they seem to be just posturing ready ahead of the primaries and that sort of stuff. But the only people that have raised any sort of serious objection appears to be Israel. So I suppose, well...
And they wouldn't be biased. Iran,
well, they wouldn't be biased at all, no, of course not. But, you know, they I suppose if Iran behaves themselves, well, then Israel will be showing up as, well, you know, the warmongers of the area. But we'll see where it goes. But I think that if anything, the last 70 years has taught us is that when people trade with each other, they're less likely to throw bombs at each other.
Yes.
And, you know, prior to the end of the Second World War, the French and the Germans used to cross each other's borders with monotonous regularity. Mm-hmm. Since they've been trading with each other, and since they've actually gone in for the economic common good with one another, and they know that trade is their way forward, they haven't thrown a single shot at one another.
Yeah, yep.
You know, and it's now warm, cordial relations. And I think that if in a place like the Middle East, those restrictions which were supposed to bring the Iranians to their knees, it seemed to me what the part that was worrying me was watching the place over the last few years was that it was the army and it was the religious police that were getting what little was there, and the average Iranian in the street was getting bugger all. Mm-hmm. But it didn't actually... the hardliners felt emboldened. So at least they appear to have a more moderate president that's been able to work with the West to try and get a solution out of it. So, you know, I'm optimistic about it. We'll see where it goes, but I am optimistic about it.
Yeah, he does seem to be one of the more moderate ones. Rouhani, I think it's pronounced.
Rouhani, I think his name is, yeah.
So he's talked about opening up, you know, their society and a bit more respect for women as well as other things. I don't know how much he's actually done, but anyway, if talking about it is at least something in that corner of the world.
Well, agreed. And, you know, I mean, it will be up to the Ayatollahs as to how much he actually gets through, but it's moving in the right direction. Like I said, I'm reason to be optimistic.
Yep. So, Scott, before we wrap up, any others that you want to throw into the mix?
Couple little minor, they are big ones, but they haven't got a lot of coverage. Looks like Tasmania is going to have another crack at a voluntary euthanasia bill. Mm-hmm. They attempted it in 2013. It did fail, but this time around, Ms. Lara Giddings, who's the former premier, she reckons she's done the numbers and it should pass the lower house by one vote.
Right.
That one, if it does go ahead in Tasmania, they won't have the same problems that the Northern Territory did, because the Northern Territory, not being a fully fledged state, its laws can be overturned by the Commonwealth government, which they were when Kevin Andrews moved his private members bill. And that was done away with. It was one of the last times I think we've had, no, in my lifetime, it was one of the first conscience motions I remember being debated, and I remember watching a lot of it and thinking to myself, you know, this is what Parliament's supposed to be, because they really were passionate about it, and the, each of them that stood to their feet, they gave a lot to it. But
right, they had ideas and they expressed them, and well,
exactly. It was so much better than this sort of pre-recorded, rehearsed nonsense that we get trotted out with, and then those Dorothy Dixer questions and so on and so forth.
Hey, I do have one more to add. One more ad. So, famous, well, amazing video of Mick Fanning attacked by a shark. You've seen that?
Yes.
Everyone's seen it.
Yeah, I have seen it. Yeah, everyone's seen it. Yeah.
Just mind-blowing, and you feel sick in
the shark just got his board, didn't it? Didn't actually connect with his body?
Correct. Well, didn't bite him. I think he got tangled up in his leg rope, and he sort of hit it with his fist at some point. So certainly physical contact between them, but he wasn't...
Yeah, absolutely.
He got out of
it
without a scratch, but... He was just returned to Australia, and he's faced a media pack at the airport. And I just heard before we sort of started the podcast, he was asking, because they asked him, how do you feel, 100 different ways, and his response was at one point, "You just thank your lucky stars, and if there is someone up there looking after us, thanks." And of course. Look, I'm a bit sympathetic towards him, but if there's someone up there looking after us, thanks. Well, I'd be going, well, if you're really looking after me, don't send the shark in my direction in the first place. Like, could you just...
Send it to that school of tuna a couple of K's away.
If you really are the all-knowing, all-seeing God who's decided to give me a bit of a break on this one, like, don't even send the shark into this particular beach on this particular day. Like... Make it easy for everybody. But none of the reporters said that. Nobody, strangely, Scott, nobody actually pulled him up on that and said that kind of doesn't really make sense. But,
In Fanning's defence, though, let's face it, this wasn't a curious moment. At least he didn't drop to his knees and do the sign of the cross.
Yeah. So
he said, if there's something up there, thanks.
He did. So,
he's qualified. So, he's qualified his statement. So, I won't throw stones at him for that one.
That's Scott, why you're the velvet glove.
I understand that. Yes.
We haven't mentioned this before, and we might talk about it another time in depth. But one of the things also on that Q&A program from Stackhouse was they were talking about what's happened in Canada with. Gay marriage, and has the world stopped, and has it all turned to ruin, and is the place a disaster as a result? And because one of the arguments was that if you allow this to happen, then the next thing will be polygamy, and
just like it says in the Old Testament.
So that was one of the things, and it was like, oh, that couldn't happen. And I don't know, I thought to myself, Scott, well, is polygamy such a bad thing? I mean, the whole notion of gay marriage and all that is, well, if two consenting adults want to do things their own way and it's not harming anybody else, where's the problem? And why couldn't we extend that to, well, if three consenting adults... wanted to do their own thing that's not harming anybody else. Well, who cares what they do in their bedroom? Like, I wonder whether...
I understand exactly what you're saying, but I don't want to engage in the conversation for fear of giving Corey Bernardi exactly what the bastard said would happen. I've read a lot and watched a lot of stuff on the Mormon fundamentalists.
Yes.
With their polygamous compounds and that sort of stuff. And there's even a reality TV show that my better half, he watches. It's called Sister Wives, and it is a look at modern polygamous families in the US. And the closest that you see to it is, listeners do, if you ever see it in the library, grab it. It's called Big Love. It was an HBO series. It was very good, but it is a modern-day polygamous family. Yeah. It was really interesting. Wouldn't be my cup of tea by any stretch of the imagination.
No.
But I've got to admit, while I would always deny this, I can't anymore because it's now on the net. But if they're not hurting anyone, what's the harm? And if provided it's consenting adults. But, you know, we've got to get over this bridge first, and unfortunately the slippery slope.
Anyway, I just encourage the listeners, next time they hear the line, well, this is all, you know, lead to rack and ruin, before we know it we'll have, you know, polygamy. Well, maybe at that point simply say to somebody, well, and what's so bad about that?
Yeah, but the other thing, you know, I mean, polygamy is at least, well, at least it's within the species.
Hmm.
You know, bestiality and marrying inanimate objects, I mean, that's just...
Yeah, I think
people like Bernardi being stupid.
Yes.
Yeah, you know. But
we'll draw the line. We'll draw the line at that one.
Well, of course you could, because you have to draw the line, because there's no way an animal, there's no way an inanimate object can give their consent.
That's right. Not an informed consent, anyway.
And not an informed consent, precisely.
Yeah.
But if we, seeing, you know, last week you told me that I'd finished on a depressing note,
Trevor,
I'd just like to remind our listeners that Monday, the 20th of July, yesterday, was the 46th anniversary of humankind's first footprints on the moon.
Mm.
Great technological achievement, and a little bit of an inspirational saying that I picked up once from someone on the radio. I think he was a Yank. He said, "The sky is not the limit when there are footprints on the moon."
But you know what? There's an enormous number of people out there who would say it never actually happened.
Well, yeah, I mean, but they're also the people that reckon that Area 51's got the UFO and all the rest of it, too.
And so, they also think that, you know, the World Trade Center didn't fall because of the planes that hit it, but because of bombs that were placed in there.
It was a controlled implosion by the CIA.
You would be astounded at the percentage of the population, again, in America, who would say...
It's not just in America. Mm. There's a group of them that now meet reasonably regularly anyway, and stand outside Central Station here in Brizzy and tell people why they think the World Trade Center was faked by the CIA.
Right. Okay. And so there's a similar group in relation to the moon landings. You say it was all set up and.
Well, yeah. But you know, something that big, someone would have blabbed by now.
Yes.
You know, so I'm confident that Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and who was the third bloke on that mission?
Oh, there's a trivia question for you.
Yeah, there's a trivia question. Mm. Listeners, email us. Mm. Yeah, email us via the Facebook page and let us know who the third
astronaut
is.
Actually, what I'm going to do, say the words very good, Scott.
Sorry?
Just say very good.
Very good.
Okay, I'm going to go back and edit and throw in the correct answer there and I'll appear very smart.
the magic of the digital age.
Indeed. So, well, we're aiming, everybody, to keep these podcasts at the 60-minute mark, and looks like we've succeeded.
According to my counter, we've done it.
Yes.
So, at
this stage, we're going to wrap it up. And
look, it's been a pleasure as always, Trevor.
All right.
Thoroughly enjoyed that chat.
Thank you, listeners.
And to all our listeners, thank you for tuning in.
And we'll catch up with you next time. Bye.
Enjoy your week ahead. Bye now.
Well, dear listener, did you enjoy that episode of the podcast? If you did, I've got a favour to ask. First up, tell some friends. Let them know about the podcast. You'll be discussing something at some time, and you might be repeating something I've said. And when you're talking to your friends, say, hey, I heard this on this podcast, and it's worth listening to. And maybe pick an episode that you think's a good one and direct them to it. Like, grab their phone and go to their podcast app and search for Iron Fist Velvet Glove and subscribe on their behalf on their phone and just put the word out. The other thing is you could become a patron and support the show. So if you go to our website, you'll see a link to Patreon, and there are some different options for subscribing and paying per episode. And really, the amount that you pay depends on what you get from the podcast. So there's different levels ranging from $1.50 Australian to, I think, $10 and various ones in between. It's really, what do you think it's worth? Is it worth a cup of coffee? Is it worth more than that, less than that? Whatever you get out of it, because not everybody gets the same. Maybe you don't listen to the whole thing. Maybe you never talk about it with people. Maybe you really couldn't care less half the time whether the podcast is there. It'll be different for everybody. So if you get a lot out of the podcast, contribute a bit more. If you don't get much, contribute less. But in any event, You can subscribe there. If you don't like the idea of a regular subscription, the website has a link to a PayPal donation, so you could just do a one-off donation every now and again. So there you go. It'd be good to spread the word, get a few more listeners, and that way, look, if we ended up getting more listeners and more money, we could do maybe a second episode or more special episodes, provide some more content. So it's up to you. If you think it's worthwhile, let people know. Thanks.